We've already had snow and temperatures well below freezing. Surefire signs that it's time to get your yard and your garden ready for winter. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day. Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Geron will be here, along with Aaron Style of Ryman Gardens. The forecast for this weekend is nice, so we'll talk about what you should be doing outside this weekend to make sure you're ready for winter when it comes back to stay. Mulching strawberries, protecting roses, making sure vulnerable plants don't get eaten by hungry critters, and of course, we'll answer your questions. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and winter paid us a short visit earlier this week. Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Geron and Aaron Style, manager of public programs at Ryman Gardens, are here to tell us what to do to get ready when winter really comes back to stay. Good morning, Richard.
Good morning.
Good morning, Aaron.
Hi.
Thank you both for being here today. And it's all of a sudden feels like September today, but...
Right. But,
but clearly,
earlier this week, it was in the teens.
Right, and it felt like
very cold.
December.
Yes, it did.
Yeah.
So.
All right, should we start with strawberries? Because every year, Richard, you tell us we have to wait and harden up our strawberries, but I bet we just did that.
Yes, we did. So this weekend, if it's not rainy or windy, you might want to go out and cover those with some straw. You want something that stays loose and airy. And put on like 4 to 5 inches. The main reasons we do that is if we have a lot of freezing and thawing, that may heave the plants up out of the ground and they could die. And also, if we have extreme cold and no cover, the flower buds are currently there. And extremely cold temperatures may damage or destroy the flowers. So you want to cover them up. Typically, we do this around mid-November, so the timing is perfect. If you're in a very windy exposed site, you can maybe cover the bed. Once you have the straw in place, you may want to cover that with some fencing, like maybe some chicken wire fencing or plastic fencing, and then put some bricks on it so it doesn't blow away. And then leave that in place until basically about early April.
Okay, but you said you want kind of a loose pack.
Right,
you don't want to really smash things down, right?
Right. Leaves don't do a very good job because a lot of leaves, when they get wet, they tend to mat down, and that traps moisture and ice and things around the plant, and that may actually lead to some plant damage. So leaves per se, tree leaves, though you may have a lot of those,
yes,
they just don't do a good job as far as they mulch on strawberries.
All right, I guess that's one of the reasons we call them strawberries, maybe.
Maybe.
All right, and in holding down the edges, you just don't want it to blow away.
Right. I mean, some gardeners live in rural areas. It's very open, exposed, and straw just simply does not stay in place when it's windy. Mm-hmm. So in that situation, using some fencing and maybe some bricks would keep that straw in place over winter.
All right. And let's look around the rest of the garden. Of course, you want to take care of those strawberries, but pretty much everything else is dead. So what do we need to do if we haven't already cleared out plant debris?
Well, most of the perennials, with the cold temperatures early in the week, most of the perennials have died back. And at some point, you want to basically go out there and clean up that dead debris. You can still do that this fall if you have time. You can also do that early next spring if you wish. There's no real rush on that. Most perennials are perfectly hardy once they're established, so you really don't have to provide any protection. They're perfectly fine, so they're okay. Roses typically do need some protection, especially if you have things like hybrid teas and floribundas. They're not real hardy, and we typically suggest, in the case of roses, to mound up dirt around the base and essentially cover the bottom 8 to 12 inches of the rose cane. So if you have things like hybrid teas, floribundas, grandifloras, do that to them. And again, in the next few days would be great. If you have old-fashioned garden roses, they're perfectly hardy. They don't need any protection whatsoever.
What do you do for your roses at Ryman Gardens, Aaron?
Well, we have quite a process because we have so many of them. What Richard described is essentially what we do. But we don't do it to individual plants. We do it to the whole bed. So we'll have a whole bed of roses that will remove the mulch, put about 12 inches of soil after we've tied up the canes to get them out of the way. And then we put fence the whole bed in with chicken wire and put about 3 foot of straw on top of it.
All right.
So, and that does very well for those roses. And then in the spring, usually about mid-March is when we remove that. Sometimes we have to do it in stages because you remove the straw and the soil is still frozen. So you have to wait a couple days before you can remove the soil. And then that's when we do our pruning and our removing of anything that may have died over the winter, and then kind of shaping up the plant. I know a lot of folks really, you get out in the garden this time of year and you really want to prune stuff, but this is not the time to do that. It's also the reason why we don't recommend using those styrofoam rose cones.
I was just going to ask about those.
You cannot put one of those things on without pruning. It's just not possible. So, plus, you know, those aren't the most attractive looking things in the world either. So,
and if you use a rose cone, those styrofoam things, you really should punch some holes in the top. Mm-hmm. So there's ventilation holes, because otherwise, if you have a mild, sunny winter day, it gets quite warm in there, and then you have those very wide temperature fluctuations, not good for the plant. So, in fact, there are some cones that actually have a removable top you can mm-hmm. take off. But if you have one that doesn't have holes, definitely punch maybe 4 or 5 holes in the top.
But you're just not a fan of them, period.
No.
No, me either. No.
All right. So steer clear. Are there other shortcuts that people try to sell rose lovers?
I think that's it. The main reason they sell those, it's just the ease of doing it. But you do have to prune the roses.
It seems easy until you start wrestling one of those around over one of those plants. And then you realize this isn't as easy as maybe it's made out to be.
Maybe it's not a shortcut after all.
Right.
And you know, when I'm looking at the other debris in the garden that I haven't gotten around to clearing out, I know we talk a lot about tomato plant diseases mm-hmm. and how you don't want to plant tomatoes in the same place 2 years right. in a row. Is it important to get that tomato plant debris out of there? Does that help control diseases?
Absolutely. If you leave that debris there, there's going to be a lot of the pathogens in the soil, and the likelihood of a severe infection that year is going to be quite high. So if you can, you want to go out there, basically very carefully clean it up, remove it from the area, and get rid of it. Either compost it or put it in the yard waste, but get rid of it. And then make a note to plant your tomatoes in a different location next spring, because even though you do that, there's still going to be some debris in the area and still spores of that disease.
And when you get that tomato debris, do you want to put it in your compost pile, or does that spread disease?
Well, it kind of depends. If you are going to put it back in the garden in the exact same area, probably not a good idea, because most home compost piles don't get warm enough as far as the temperatures to actually destroy the plant pathogens. So in that case, probably wouldn't be a good idea. But you could do that if your intention was to use the compost elsewhere, let's say in a flower bed, because most likely it would not affect flowers or perennials or annuals. So you could do that if you're going to put it in a different location.
Okay. Now, every week on this show, we hear from someone who has had a tree or a shrub or something like that almost eaten away by a rabbit or by a deer. Now, this time of year, of course, we have a little bit of an opportunity to prevent that. Mm-hmm. What do we need to be looking for to identify the plants that need protection during the winter months?
Well, there are certain plants that we just know that rabbits like. And typically any small tree, especially a fruit tree, like an apple or crab apple or a pear, but any small tree, because they have a very thin layer of bark, and the actual rabbits are after the tissue directly beneath the bark. Other plants, typically woody plants they love, are things like roses, raspberries, certain shrubs, for example, the burning bush or winged euonymus, they love that. Mm-hmm. Flowering quince, so a number of things. But if they're hungry, they'll eat almost everything. So if you notice rabbits in your neighborhood, if you have some small trees and shrubs, I would try to protect them so that doesn't happen.
And define small tree.
Small tree would be like maybe a trunk diameter of 3 inches or less would be a small tree in my mind.
So even a pretty big small tree.
Yeah. As the tree grows, that bark layer gets thicker and thicker, and eventually the rabbits really can't bother that tree much when they have a nice thick bark layer. But when they're small, they definitely can. So anything typically small should be protected.
Okay, now once you have identified these vulnerable trees and plants and shrubs, what do you do?
I would put chicken wire fencing around them or hardware cloth. I prefer hardware cloth. It's more rigid. You can make a nice cylinder. It should be at least 24 inches tall, up to maybe 36. Mm-hmm. And if you can attach that to some sturdy stakes and maybe pin the bottom to the ground so it doesn't, you know, move and they can't crawl underneath it, and basically leave that in place until basically spring. And sometimes when we have a heavy snow, you may have to go out there and actually remove some snow around the trees just so they can't get over the actual fencing.
Right. I mean, you make it that high because of the snow.
Right.
Most rabbits aren't going to be able to reach up 24 inches.
But when you have a snowdrift, they can.
Are you able to reuse the same hardware cloth cylinder year after year?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You can take it off in the spring and store it inside in the garage. That's what I do on occasion. They're rigid, which is kind of nice. With the chicken wire fencing, it's just kind of nasty to deal with. It can be as far as rolling it up and putting it back up again. So I typically make these cylinders of hardware cloth and just take them off and on, put them off and on. So,
all right. Now, are there other fall chores that may be hanging out there that we should also be thinking about?
I at the gardens, you know, we do spend a lot of time protecting things from rabbits. And we talked a little bit about trees, but we also do the same stuff for the shrubs that they really like. And using something like a 36-inch tall chicken wire fence or some hardware cloth that kind of surrounds that shrub can go a long way to help keep those critters off of it. A lot of times all you have to do is make it hard to get to. The other thing to consider, too, is if the plant's small enough, you may consider putting a top on that shrub, especially if it's a very small, newly planted thing, and they could hop over top of it.
As long as you remember to take it off in the spring, right?
Yes, that's an important part. You know, all this stuff that we mentioned, the hardware cloth, any kind of tree wrap or any of those kinds of things needs to come off in the spring. You don't want to leave that stuff there year-round. You don't want to forget about it, because if that plant grows into that stuff, it's cause a lot of damage.
All right, and let's just say, hypothetically speaking, if I had a bag of tulip bulbs that I've been meaning to plant and haven't gotten them in the ground yet, do I still have time?
Absolutely.
Oh, yes.
All right. Absolutely.
But this weekend would be good, right?
This weekend would be good before the ground freezes.
All right. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. With me today, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Duran and Aaron Style, manager of public programs at Ryman Gardens. And they are here to answer your questions. Give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and with me, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Duran and Aaron Style of Ryman Gardens in Ames. And you are welcome to join our conversation with your questions at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send an email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We've been talking about getting our yards and gardens ready for the wintertime, but of course you can ask any of your questions. And Carl is on the line first from Palo. Hi, Carl.
Well, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, what would you like to talk about?
Well, you answered all my questions. It's just that I'm going to talk to you anyhow.
All right. You were just hoping to protect some evergreens from deer this winter?
Yes, and apparently they even rabbits even go after them, huh?
They will if they're small, right. If they're bigger, probably not. But if they're small, let's say under 3 foot, yes, potentially they could.
Yeah, they're only a foot tall, not even that. They're just seedlings. I just put them in the ground yesterday.
Okay. So I would probably put something around them so the rabbits can't get them if you have rabbits in the vicinity.
Yeah, there's lots of them, yeah. What's that hardwood cloth there? Where do you get that in?
You can buy that at garden centers, hardware stores. Pretty common.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Thanks for the show.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Carl.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Next up, let's go to Bill in Duncombe. Hello, Bill.
Good morning, you all.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, I am confused. Sunday I asked the same question from the Hort Show in Des Moines about transplanting trees now. And I was counseled emphatically not to do so. And would you care to comment on that before I send my zinger?
Okay. Well, as far as transplanting a small tree or shrub, if it's a deciduous plant, you want to do that basically when it's dormant. Okay. So possibly it could be the fall after a leaf drop or early in the spring. I would definitely prefer early in the spring. And the reason for that would be whenever you dig something up and transplant it, you're going to damage the root system to some extent. And if you do that in the fall, and then we have a very long, very harsh winter, that plant may not survive the winter that great just because it has suffered some recent damage. Okay. If you do it in the spring, it's gone through the winter. It hasn't leafed out yet. If you do it then and give it good care, it's not going to be subjected to anything harsh for the next several weeks.
Okay. How do you rationalize that with the state nursery lifting thousands of trees, selling them to customers, and they're being planted as we speak?
Well, most nurseries, when you buy bare root material, will dig them up. They typically store those in some type of storage facility where you have very cool temperatures and a very high humidity, and then they ship them out in the spring. That's typically how many bare root plants are sold as far as through the mail, and that's perfectly fine. As far as planting them, those are small trees and shrubs, and typically when you do that, you'd probably anticipate you're going to lose some, and that's just the way it is.
All right, Bill, thanks a lot for your call. And next up, let's go to Dave in Wayne City. Hello, Dave.
Hello, how are you today?
Good. What's your question?
Well, my question is about soil test report that I got back from the Iowa State University Soil Testing Laboratory. I'm trying to establish a nut and fruit orchard, and they told me that I needed 2 pounds of 1846-0 per 1,000 square feet. Where in the world do you get 1846-0 fertilizer?
Okay. Well, you may have a difficult time finding that specifically. Basically, what they're saying is that apparently your soil is somewhat deficient in phosphate, which is
right.
The second number. And you may not be able to find 1846-0 specifically, but you can probably find something like bone meal at most garden centers.
Okay.
And you can use that instead.
Okay.
So that would be an option. As far as a fruit and nut orchard, I think a very important thing would be make sure it's a well-drained soil. That's
well,
very, very...
Well, worst soil I've got.
Okay.
I'm kind of stuck with it.
Okay. Well,
it's not that well drained. It's a difficult soil, and that's why I'm
right.
Just trying to establish trees on it.
Right. Well, fruit trees like apple trees and your stone fruits like cherries, plums, apricots, etc., they do require a well drained soil.
And mostly, and this is going to be nut trees.
Okay.
Northern pecan.
Okay.
Walnut. Hycans and so
okay.
forth. So, and some persimmon.
Okay.
So mostly it's going to be nut trees.
In my mind, drainage is actually more important than adding the phosphate, in
okay.
my mind. You can do that.
Mm-hmm.
You can use bone meal. It's fairly widely available. But
mm-hmm.
in my mind, drainage is more important because if you have a wet, poorly drained site, many of your fruit trees and nut trees may have a problem
mm-hmm.
Because they might develop a root problem. And for that reason, they might have a very difficult time surviving long term.
So if Dave is planning to do a large area this way, would this be a time to possibly look into tiling that area?
Tiling or maybe looking at a different site. When you establish a commercial orchard, you have to very carefully consider the site as far as, is that site really suitable for an orchard? Is the soil going to drain well enough? Elevation is important. So tiling is one option. Maybe finding an alternate site may be a better option.
Well, and I think the reason why this is so important, it's a big investment in time and money, and so you want to make sure you do it right.
Right. And those trees hopefully would produce for maybe 25, 50 years. So you want a site that will be suitable for those trees.
All right. Good luck with your project, Dave. Thank you so much for your call. And, of course, you can join our conversation with your questions at 866-780-9100, 866-780-9100. We have lost our access to the Internet around here today, so hold off on email questions. Hopefully we'll get that back fairly soon. But the phone is the best way to reach us, 866-780-9100. Sharon is on the line next in Iowa City. Hi, Sharon.
Hi. My question is that I have purchased some apple trees and serviceberry and some things to plant at a house that my son is building this fall that won't be ready till the spring.
Okay.
And since it's in the country, we don't want to plant the fruit trees and such until we're ready to fence them off.
Okay.
But I have these, and I want to know how to winter them over in my yard.
Okay. So they're in a pot or container, correct?
They are.
Okay.
And I just want to tell you that behind my garage, which faces north and south, there's a six-foot space that I have an eight-foot fence right behind that six-foot space. So that's a good area that's pretty protected.
Okay.
So I use that area.
So what I would do, I would go to that sheltered location, and I would dig holes and set the pots in the ground as if you were planting those, okay? And you want to do that so that the roots will not be exposed to extreme cold. If you leave the containers above ground level, the potting soil temperatures could get extremely cold to the point where there might be some root damage. But if you dig a hole and set the pots in the ground, then you're going to keep the temperatures much, much warmer. So I would kind of dig a wide hole and place the pots in the hole, place soil back up around the pots, and when you're done, the top of the pot should be just slightly above the surrounding soil. Leave them there basically through the winter, and then next spring you can remove those and plant them whenever you wish. Another thing you might want to do is, again, if you have rabbits, you might want to put chicken wire fencing around the entire area where you have your trees and shrubs to make sure rabbits don't damage them.
All right, and I think she should probably have her son dig that trench for those.
Yeah, that would be nice.
Trees and shrubs. Sharon, thank you so much for your call. And next up, Dee Dee is on the line. And Sully, hi, Dee Dee.
Hello. Hey, I think you kind of answered my question earlier, but I'm going to ask it anyway. We have an autumn blaze maple that's probably 6 to 8 inches in diameter, maybe about 18 feet tall, and we need to move it. Is now a good time, or should we wait till spring?
Boy, that is a very big tree.
Yes, it's pretty good size. We have talked to a professional tree mover who says that he can pretty much, says it's a pretty good success rate moving it in late fall. All the leaves are gone now, of course,
right.
but it's getting pretty late, so I guess we're just a little concerned whether we should do it now or not.
How big is the tree spade as far as a soil ball?
Oh, I want to say 6 feet, I believe.
Okay. I'd want something bigger, if
okay.
possible.
Okay.
The bigger, the better, because
okay.
that's a pretty big tree,
mm-hmm.
and if you have a soil ball that's 6 feet in diameter, that's going to be cutting off quite a few of the roots.
Okay.
And that's my concern. That's a pretty big tree.
Mm-hmm.
If I was going to do it, I would probably prefer early to mid-April.
Okay.
As soon as the ground is workable, Let the ground thaw out, let it get kind of firm, and then go ahead and do it.
Uh-huh.
And I would prefer a bigger tree spade if I could find one.
Okay.
Maybe 84 inches, maybe bigger if possible.
Okay.
I want to get as many roots as I can to give me a better chance of that tree surviving. So,
okay.
But I would probably prefer spring versus fall.
Okay. Sounds good. That's what we'll probably do then.
All right, Dee Dee, thanks a lot for your call.
You bet. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Next up, Kay is on the line in Ames. Hi, Kay.
Hi. We have a red oak tree that has a lot of dead branches on its lower part of its side that has been shaded by a sugar maple. And I'm wondering if we cut off some of the competing branches from the sugar maple, will the oak put out new branches on that side where the dead ones are?
It may. It probably won't, though. Your best bet is to, you can always remove dead branches. I'd wait till late winter, early spring, somewhere around March to do any of that pruning. You could prune up the sugar maple just to give the red oak a little bit more room, but you're not likely to see a lot of new branches sprouting because of that.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
All right, Kay. Thanks a lot for your call. Next up, let's go to Lyle in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Lyle.
Hello.
Hi. What's your question?
Hello.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes.
All right. What's your question?
I have a large green ash tree. We've got 108-inch circumference, and it's about a 70 by 100 canopy. And I wondered if I should be proactive and cut that thing down and what I need to do to maybe can harvest some lumber out of it.
So when you say be proactive, meaning the emerald ash borer?
Yes.
Okay. If that's a healthy tree, I would be inclined to enjoy it as long as possible. That would be my thought.
Mm-hmm.
And if I had space in the area, I might plant one or two other trees as a replacement.
Mm-hmm.
But I would be inclined to enjoy that tree as long as I could.
It sounds like a beautiful tree, Lyle.
Well, it is, but on the other hand, I need to understand. So you got to have the bark off the tree or whatever. You can salvage it, but I wanted to make sure that I could possibly salvage some wood out of it.
I see.
Right. And you could contact maybe a mill. There are a few mills in Iowa, and see if they would maybe help, or if they're interested in doing it.
Well, and Richard, maybe we haven't decided this in Iowa yet. If a tree is infested with the emerald ash borer and it is cut down, do you know what the rules will be about disposal of that wood?
I would think that it would have to be basically chipped up.
Okay, so it would have to be. And in Michigan, when we went through all of this when I was living there, if the tree was infested and had to be cut down, it had to be chipped to pieces that were smaller than 2 inches. So if Lyle really wants lumber out of this tree, he probably should think about doing something sooner rather than later.
Right, but also, I guess I would think that when the emerald ash borer was found within like 15 miles of your location, it hasn't been so far. And so at this point, I probably wouldn't remove the tree. But if someone does find it in the Cedar Rapids area, then I might consider having the tree taken down.
Okay, Lyle. So you might have a couple of years left, if we're lucky.
Hopefully more.
Yep. All right, Lyle. Thank you very much for your call. Next up, Jane in Johnston. Hi, Jane.
Hi, I have a tree in my backyard, and I don't know what kind of tree it is. It was here when we moved in. I can tell you that it has green leaves in the spring, and they gradually turn to a dark purple.
Okay.
And it has these black, they almost look like pods hanging on it. I've been told that it's gall.
Yep, now we know what that is.
Anything we can do about that?
Well, what you have is some type of choke cherry. And there are a couple cultivars. One is Canada Select. One is Schubert. And they have leaves that are initially green, but then they turn to a dark purple. So that's their ornamental characteristic, the attractive foliage. The problem is they're very susceptible to a disease called black knot. Okay. And black knot looks basically like maybe a burnt hot dog on a stick, mm-hmm. kind of.
Yep, yep, that
and,
would be it.
It's dark, it's kind of rough in texture, and it's around the branch. We have quite a few choke cherries here on campus at Iowa State. It's a very common thing, especially in the fall once you have leaf drop, because you can see these galls very, very easily at this point. As far as what you do about it, basically I probably wouldn't do much of anything. To prevent that, you would have to go out and physically remove every single branch that had this on the branch. And you would have to prune it, the branch off, about 8 inches below the visible gall that you see. And then you have to spray it in the spring. And if you have a tree that has quite a few on these in the tree, removing those wouldn't leave you with much of a tree. So I would just probably ignore it for the most part.
All right, Jane, thanks a lot for your call. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back to answer more of your questions in a moment. 866-780-9100. With me, Richard Giron from ISU Extension Horticulture and Aaron Style of Ryman Gardens in Ames. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and with me, Iowa State University Extension Horticulturist Richard Giron and Aaron Style, Manager of Public Programs at Ryman Gardens. They are here to answer your questions, and you can join the conversation at 866-780-9100. Maybe you can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We seem to be connected for the moment. And here's an email from Megan in Cedar Rapids. There are two mature rose bushes right off our front patio that I don't know what to do with for the winter. Do I have to cover them? And can I trim them at all now, or do I have to wait for spring?
Well, if they're an old-fashioned shrub rose, they don't need any protection. If they're a modern rose like a hybrid tea, Floribunda, then we would suggest mounting dirt around the base, covering the bottom 8 to 12 inches, and doing any pruning that you need done in early spring.
All right, this one's from David. I have two small swamp white oak trees, 1 to 2 inches in diameter, that already had their bark partially rubbed off. I put tree wrap on them and protective plastic after I noticed the damage. Will the damage kill the trees? Anything else I can watch for or do next spring to help them survive?
You really can't do much once the damage has occurred. Wrapping them really doesn't help a great deal. If most of the bark is still intact, the tree should survive. But next September, I'm assuming we're talking about deer here, next September I would pound in three very sturdy wooden posts or three steel fence posts around the tree in a triangle about a foot apart. And I would do this in September, so when the bucks come later on that fall, they can't get in there to rub their antlers on the tree trunk.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Annetta is on the line in Iowa City. Hi, Annetta.
Yes, hi.
Hi, what's your question?
I have two peach trees in my yard that are about 5 years old, and this is the first year that they had fruit, and they did a great job. I had tons of fruit. But I'm wondering about what I need to do to prune them and if this is the right time or if I have to wait a couple more months before I prune.
I would prune those in March or early April before they leaf out. And maybe just some minor thinning is necessary. If you have anything as far as a broken branch, dead branch, obviously prune those out. But for the most part, if it's a healthy tree, fairly well shaped, maybe just some minor thinning.
Okay, great. I did notice this year it had a strange yellowy goo coming out that got hard, like a gum.
Mm-hmm.
Could that be a disease, or is that just something from an insect? Or
well, there's a number of things that will cause that to form, so it's hard to say exactly, but it's pretty common on your cherries, your plums, your peaches. So it's hard to say exactly what it is. One or two is not a big deal. If you see a lot of it, I'd be concerned. A lot of areas on the tree, but there's really not much to do.
Okay, great.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call. And let's answer a couple of email questions. now that I actually have access to them. This is from David in Waukee. He says, is it okay to cover strawberries with pine needles for the winter? We don't like straw because it always has seeds in it and results in oats or whatever in the strawberry patch.
Okay. Pine needles are fine. Yes.
All right. And this is from Jen, who says, I would like to know what leaves can be used for, if not for strawberries. Can I use them to insulate garlic? Can I burn them and use them for compost in my garden?
Well, you can definitely compost them. That's a good thing to do. Mm-hmm. You could also shred them. If you have like a mulching lawnmower, you could actually shred the leaves and then store those and then use them as a mulch next year in the garden.
Okay.
In the vegetable garden, things like that. A nice mulch.
All right. And this one's from Angela. A pink-flowered rhododendron was installed on the west side of our Iowa City house this September. The shrub is about 3 feet tall and about as wide. It has been mulched and watered regularly. Do we need to cover this shrub for the winter?
It's on what side of the house again?
The west side.
Okay. I would keep on watering that until the ground freezes. What they might want to do possibly is put up a burlap screen to the west of the plant to keep off the sun and wind, because that can dry out the foliage and cause some winter burn. So they could maybe do that, but there's no need to actually cover the plant per se.
All right. This one's from Ben in Ames. I have two questions about a Bolly Evans cherry tree that I planted in August, both concerning tree wrap. I'm mainly worried about rabbits eating the tree this winter since I live in town. I used a paper wrap, but would a plastic tube type wrap work better? Secondly, how high up the tree should I wrap? And the tree's only about 5 feet tall.
Yeah, the plastic tubing would be better than that paper. Mm-hmm. The actual rabbits could eat through that paper if they wanted to. So I'd probably prefer the plastic. And as far as height, go at least 2 feet high.
I would go as high up as you can. Cherry tree is one of rabbits' favorites to peel the bark off of.
Well, and he also says that some of the bottom limbs are only about a foot above the ground.
Okay.
You can cut that into sections, too. And so you can cut a section about a foot up and wrap it. And then there's probably a scaffold of branches that are all at a similar layer. You can go just above that, put another layer on, too.
Or get some chicken wire fencing.
And cage the whole thing.
Yeah.
All right. That sounds maybe like the most practical solution at this point. All right. And let's go back to the phones. Carol's on the line in Center Point. Hi, Carol.
Hello. I'm wondering if it's too late to trim the candling on, like, junipers, yews, evergreens like that, bushes?
Well, I'd prefer to wait on that just because we're so close to winter, and maybe do it in the spring, like in April.
Okay. Will do.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call.
Bye.
Bye. Next up, we have Dustin in East Moline. Hi, Dustin.
Hello. I have some hostas that have just gone wild. They're huge. I've been told to transplant those in like October. Well, I procrastinated. Is it possible to split those and transplant them in the spring?
I think spring is the best time to do that. When the leaves first start coming up, they look like little fingers coming out of the ground. That's the best time to dig and divide. It won't affect greatly the appearance of the plants the rest of the season. You won't have big floppy leaves, things like that. They recover very nicely from that in the spring. I would prefer it in the spring over October.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah.
All right, thanks a lot for your call. And next up, let's go to Wally in Bradford. Hi, Wally.
Hi. I listened to the answer to a lady, a gentleman about planting apple trees or storing them for the winter.
Mm-hmm.
I did a similar thing. I purchased some apple trees and, of course, was told that I can plant them. A couple of my options are a warehouse that will get down to near freezing but not much below 20. I thought about keeping them in there until spring. And the other one is a older, colder warehouse. Still has a concrete floor and rodent proof that would be totally dark. I could bank them in bales or something. Are either one of those preferable options to the digging a trench and planting the pots and trying to prevent them from rabbits?
Yeah, if you have some type of structure where the temperatures stay consistently cold, let's say from the teens to maybe low 40s, consistently, that should work. So if it's a maybe an unheated garage or some shed that stays consistently cold, not extremely cold, but cold, that would keep them dormant and they should be okay.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call. And next up, let's go to Bob in Waterloo. Hi, Bob.
Good morning. I had a question about annual ornamental grasses. Would there be any way to get a seed off them at any time? The ones I like is purple fountain grass.
Yeah, it would be pretty difficult to harvest the seed and get the exact same looking plant the next year. And so you're better off buying new seed for those annual grasses each year.
There's another variety I like. It's called a king cut grass. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the sedge.
Tropical, yeah.
Yeah. And that's another one. You know, you can overwinter them if you have a cool spot, like we just described. Most of these are perennial. They're just not winter hardy. So
right.
If you can get them in a spot that doesn't get, say, below, 15 or 20 degrees, but doesn't get any warmer than, say, 40 or 45 degrees, you can overwinter them very nicely in those situations, too. It takes a little more work than a woody plant, but
and
it
that
is
would
possible.
Be before the first frost, then?
Yeah.
Yeah, because they really get hit by the frost really easy.
Yeah, and, you know, the roots may still be alive, so it's always worth a try, you know. That's part of the fun of gardening, right, is trying some of these things. So it's worth a try. It hasn't gotten bitterly cold yet, so that wouldn't have killed them, but you would want to make sure you protect them.
All right, Bob, thanks a lot for your call, and let's go to another Bob now, and Matt in Nashua. Hi, Bob.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
I have an aging cherry tree that we planted like 20 years ago or more, and this last couple years it has hardly had any cherries on it, but it's starting to get fresh shoots coming up. The leaves are identical from near the bottom. I don't know exactly how close to the bottom they are, and I wondered if those newer shoots would be the same tree and have the same fruit later, or if they're something I should just let the whole tree go.
Well, if they're very close to the ground, they might be from the rootstock, which means it's a different plant. It would not give you the same tree or the fruit. So that's the key as far as where do they originate. Do they originate from below the graft or above the graft? So if it's close to the ground, I would probably think probably from the rootstock.
That's what I suspected.
Yeah,
what's the life expectancy of a cherry tree like that? They're the sour cherries.
Well, it's really hard to say because it really depends upon the site and some other factors. Like I said, cherry trees hate wet, poorly drained sites. And we had very wet years in 2009, 2010. Some cherry trees at that point just simply died because it was too wet. So I would say 25 to 30 years would be typical, fairly common.
All right, Bob, thanks a lot for your call. Dave is up next in Morley. Hi, Dave.
Howdy.
Hi, what's your question?
Hey, you got a lot of Bobs and Daves today.
Yeah.
Hey, when is a good time to plant winter rye for a cover crop?
Well, it would have been nice to do it like in September, October.
Yeah.
But at this point, it's getting rather late for that. So I'm thinking the soil temperatures are probably too cold for germination at this point.
Okay. Hey, and one more thing. That fellow that was looking for that fertilizer that was kind of had the high numbers,
mm-hmm.
he could get a hold of like Midwest BioAg. You know, they sell to the farmers.
Mm-hmm.
Or if he gets a hold of somebody who's like a greenskeeper at a golf course, they know a lot about that stuff, and they could tell him where he could find that at.
Right, if they wanted that specific number, right.
All right, Dave, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, Ann in Summers. Hi, Ann.
Hi.
Hi, what's
I
your question?
I was wondering about pussy willows, trimming them down, or what to do with one that's overgrown.
Well, I'd probably do that in late winter, and you could prune those back pretty severely. I would do it probably in March, bring in maybe some of the branches to force indoors so you can enjoy that in late winter. But I would prefer basically March.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call. And next up, Darla in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Darla.
Yes. Hello. Good morning.
Hi. What's your question?
I'm trying to do organic gardening and avoid any chemical use whatsoever. And I had great success and a wonderful garden this year. However, about fifth season on my zucchini plants, a bug appeared, and it was a round, gray-looking bug, and it ended up killing off several of the plants. And I did look up non-chemical remedies for bugs on zucchini, and it recommended a white pepper, which I did use. However, I did end up losing about two-thirds of the plants that I had. Is there some other organic method that I could use to prevent that for next year?
Well, I'm not sure exactly what insect that was. Maybe it was a squash bug. Something you can do with the squash bug is check on the underside of the foliage, and the squash bug female does lay her eggs in masses. They're kind of a brick red. And if you find those, you can squash those between your fingers or whatever and destroy them before they have a chance to hatch. Another possibility might be neem, which is a organic type insecticide that you could possibly try.
I know a lot of folks use, especially on their cucurbit crops like squash, they use row covers at certain times of the year. And I don't know how effective that would be in this situation, but it can help if you can exclude with a row cover the adults from laying eggs and then remove it just as flowering starts so that you still get pollination. You can reduce, hopefully reduce at least some of the population that way too.
All right, Darla, thanks a lot for your call. And a quick question from Eldon and Atkins to finish the show. Hi, Eldon.
Good morning. You answered my first question. Next question is oak leaf hydrangea. Any special care? We live just west of Cedar Rapids.
Okay. It's kind of marginally hardy. If it's a smaller plant, possibly what you could do would be to put some chicken wire fencing around the plant and maybe fill that within the cylinder with some straw or pine needles so it has some protection.
All right, Eldon, thank you so much for your call. And Richard Giron, thank you.
You're welcome.
Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron. Aaron Stile, thank you very much.
Thank you, Charity.
Aaron Stile's manager of public programs at Ryman Gardens, and you guys gave me a long to-do list for the weekend. Thanks a lot for that. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Emily Woodbury, Sarah Bowden, and Ben Stanton. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. We had technical support today from Jason Burns. And with me in the studio right now is Ben Kiefer. It's river to river. It's a Friday. That means news buzz, right?
Yes, we are news buzzing today. That's a chance for us to have some quick conversations about a half dozen news items that we didn't get to earlier in the week, including the latest decision by President Obama for people who had their insurance policies canceled, that they may be able to retain those for a year. We'll talk about the implications of that with Dan Shane of the Department of Health Management and Policy at the University of Iowa. Also, some other stories, Charity, that we're interested in. Clay Masters will be with us talking about the tension surrounding the new airport in Mahaska County. Dean Borg, at the end of the hour, will tell us about the closing of this very popular restaurant in central Iowa, The Suburban, number of other things as well. But it'll be
a busy hour.
It always is a news buzz edition of the program today at noon. Thanks,
all right.
Charity.
This is a fairly recent addition to the show. I've been really enjoying it.
Yeah, it is. It gets a sort of a high speed end to our week as we buzz through a number of topics. So,
all right,
we think it's working out all right.
Ben Kiefer, that's River to River, coming up today at noon. You can send us email anytime, at least when we have internet connectivity. Talk of Iowa at iowapublicradio.org. I'm Charity Nebbe. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.